You're tuned in to the Kojo Nam, the show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, we talk playoff baseball in D.C. with a focus on the potential for glory and heartache to shape a fan base in equal measure. But first, for well over a century, Catholic orders and institutions have created homes for their numbers in Northeast D.C., giving the neighborhoods of Brookland, Edgewood, and Michigan Park the nickname Little Rome. But now many of these institutions are feeling increased financial pressure and have already sold or are thinking of selling land adjacent to their property to developers. Here with us to explore the implications is Martin Ostermuhl. He's a reporter at WAMU 88.5. Martin, good to see you.
Thanks for having me again.
Also in studio is John Feely. He is an ANC commissioner in Brookland, Michigan Park, and is co-author of the Images of America book on Brookland. John Feely, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
You too can join this conversation. Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Do you live in Brookland, Michigan Park, or Edgewood? Tell us what appeals to you about the area and what changes you think development would bring, for better or for worse. 800-433-8850. Martin, D.C. is one of the few major East Coast cities without a Little Italy, but it does have a Little Rome. What part of the city are we talking about, and how did it get that name?
So we're talking about Brookland, Michigan Park, and Edgewood. These are the neighborhoods, you know, roughly along Michigan Avenue, kind of, you know, on North Capitol Street. You take a right on Michigan Avenue that kind of cuts diagonally across the neighborhood into Northeast D.C. So those are the neighborhoods. And I think anybody who's been there has, you know, the first thing they'll see along Michigan Avenue is there's Trinity University on the right. There's Catholic University on the left. And then, there's the Basilica, of course, which is actually, I found out reporting this story, is the tallest building in D.C. Not the tallest structure, it's the tallest building in D.C. But beyond kind of those big, you know, institutions, you get a lot of smaller orders kind of sprinkled throughout the neighborhood. And just near me, I live in Michigan Park. I moved there last year. We have St. Joseph Seminary, which is one of the focuses of the story. It's a seminary there that's been there for 100 plus years, I believe. And it's kind of the focus because it's one of the places that is looking to sell some of the land it has behind the seminary to sustain the seminary itself.
John, just how far back in the city's history does the Catholic connection in this corner of the city go, and how many institutions are we talking about?
Well, the Catholic connection goes back to the founding of Catholic University. I mean, if you went back before suburban development, you'd find that there were a few Catholic families scattered through that area before suburban development. But I would say that the main push, or the kind of the starting point for Catholic institutions in Brookland, was the founding of Catholic University. And then shortly after that, the Franciscans brought a large piece of property, 40-acre property. Well, they even had more than that long ago. But now, today, the Franciscans still have one of our gems in Brookland, the Franciscan Monastery, which is a 40-acre site, most of which is undeveloped land. Also, beside that property, later on some of the land the Franciscans bought back in at the turn of the 20th century, was a Franciscan seminary, which now belongs to Howard University and was Howard Divinity School. Many individual houses throughout the neighborhood, I'd say at least 20, belong to orders. And small groups of religious men and women live in those houses.
And it should be mentioned that Catholic University was founded in the year 1887, so that's how long the presence has been maintained there. Martin, did Catholic University start something of a trend? How did that institution foster the development around its campus? And what are other Catholic orders in that corner of the city now doing or considering?
Right. So starting with Catholic University, about 2 years ago, they opened the Monroe Street Market. It's this big $200 million kind of five-block mixed-use development. It's got residences, restaurants, retail, that sort of thing. It used to be, I believe, a Holiday Inn and some campus buildings. I think there was a dorm. But just like a lot of universities, they're sitting on land. They need money. They're leveraging the land that they have to get money for the university. So this is whole new development. It's right along the metro. It's, you know, a big, tall building, lots of people living there. It's drawing folks kind of towards the center of Brookland, or Edgewood, technically. I don't know that that's exactly what gave the rest of the Catholic orders in the neighborhood that the idea to do this, but a lot of them have. I mean, we're talking, the story focuses on three. There's the Paulists, who about a decade ago actually sold a plot of their land to EYA. It's a developer here in the area.
Who you also mentioned in your story.
Yeah, exactly. They built Chancellor's Row, 237 townhouses. And then from that point on, now we've got the Redemptorists want to do it. They're on 7th Street, not far from the Paulists. You've got the Josephites, who are a little further north in Michigan Park. And now actually the Paulists, who last year gave up their main seminary building, which is St. Paul's College, they gave that up to two. It's now the home for two charter schools. And they're selling basically the remaining green space that they have to another developer for 78 townhouses. So they're basically the majority, I'd say almost all that land that, you know, a decade, 15 years ago was either just the seminary or all green space will soon be townhouses.
800-433-8850. Do you think there's a way to retain the feel of a community even as it changes? Give us examples you see of it working, or tell us why you think it doesn't. 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org or send us a tweet at Kojo Show. You know, I got involved with that neighborhood when I became chairman of the Public Access Corporation, which is in a city-owned building in Brooklyn that's known as the Brook Mansion. But, John, you have been living there all your life. You're living in the house that you grew up in.
Yes, I am.
And a lot of residents really like the kind of almost suburban feeling that this corner of the city can have. How do you think these institutions shape the atmosphere of the whole neighborhood?
I think that the open space has preserved a kind of a village quality to Brookland. When you look at the fact that St. Anselm's Abbey, which is another 40-acre-plus site to the east and the north in North Brentwood, really, North Michigan Park and Michigan Park. Mm-hmm. And then you come over to the Howard Divinity School property, you come to the monastery property, you see a ring, then you come back to Catholic U, which has 49 acres of undeveloped land across Harewood Road. Then we have the Circle Line forts, the Civil War fort areas, federal land that create this green buffer around Brookland. I think probably some of the most enviable properties are the ones that abut these large open spaces. People who live on Otis Street and whose houses back onto these open spaces behind the Franciscan Monastery. It's a bird flyway. It's a place where if you're looking for wild mushrooms, you can find them. Foxes, you see them. So there's a lot of natural amenities that are part of living in Brookland, and a quiet and a quality of, I mean, I think air quality and natural life that is something that's really to be treasured in the city.
How about Michigan Park? Same thing?
Michigan Park takes you all the way to St. Anselm's. So that property, you know, our the people who abut St. Joseph's Seminary, for example, have, I'd say, three-quarters of its immediate neighbors have been looking at playing fields for the last 100 years.
Martin, obviously affordability is one of the things that would cause a family to want to move someplace, but how did that suburban-like feel affect your decision to move there, especially given the fact that you were raising a family?
I will admit it was tough to begin with because we were coming from Columbia Heights, so we were used to the hustle and bustle. And when we first moved to Michigan Park, I'm not going to lie, I was a little unnerved by how quiet it was all the time. it was, you know, one of the reasons we did it was because it really was a nice community feel. Just predominantly middle class families, more older families than younger, but that's changing a little bit. There's a lot you see a lot more kids. Mm-hmm. There's a great playground there. Turkey Thicket draws from all over the kind of Northeast DC, so it's just a good place to raise a kid. You can walk along the sidewalks, very little traffic usually during the day. So that's kind of what attracted me. But again, the affordability issue, like when we bought our house, we were told by neighbors who'd been there for 20, 30 years, speaking very honestly, they're like, prices are going up just like the rest of the city. Like the pinch is now coming to that little neck of Little Rome. I mean, Brookland had already, I think it was last year, earlier this year, they sold the first $1 million home sold there. And psychologically, that says something about a neighborhood that I don't know everybody was ready for.
Which brings me to my next question. Is there something unique about this area as it exists now and the volume of property that is in or could be developed soon that may make it significantly different?
I mean, Well, real quick, I think my perspective is, number one, you just have the open green space. It's on the market. That alone will do it. And, you know, developers nowadays will tell you that in the district, it's not like there's, you know, a big open farm that you can just open unused land that you can develop on. They're looking for what they call infill development, like plots of land that people wouldn't otherwise think to build houses on. Mm. Also, the majority of the neighborhood is within quasi-walking distance or cycling distance or bus distance of a metro station. I mean, I live less than a mile away from the Brooklyn station, about a mile away from the Fort Totten station. There's a lot of development happening at the Fort Totten metro station. There's plenty left to be done at the Brooklyn metro station. So I think there's a sense of you'll get all the amenities of these big development projects by the metro station, but you can live kind of in between them and still have a slightly quieter lifestyle. So I think that's the draw.
John, are you concerned that part of that environment, that atmosphere might be lost with development?
Oh, yeah. And one of the things that I find disturbing is developers are contacting these institutions to talk to them about the possibility of buying land from them. Developers like EYA have approached a lot of our large land stakeholders or institutions to say, we're ready. The idea that it's a foregone conclusion that institutional property will be developed is very concerning, because what is lacking, besides Turkey Thicket, which is a great resource, is open space that is community-owned, that has the possibility of being recreational areas. And what I'm not seeing with the developments that have happened already in Brooklyn is developers who are including some kind of open space option in a neighborhood that has really had that as a major characteristic, having that the availability of open space.
Here's Malcolm, who's in North Michigan Park. Malcolm, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Coach O. I've been living in North Michigan Park since 1979. Bought my house for $62,500. It's probably worth $600,000 now. My comment is that the Catholics have had both a negative and positive impact on the neighborhood. I actually drove a school bus for St. Joseph's Daycare Center when I was in grad school at Howard. But I've also seen them sell the property at Howard University next to Franciscan Monastery at Howard University, which is now broke and can't finish the development. And I've also, seen them sell St. Anselm's Academy, or St. used to be St. Margaret's, to Boys Town for a residential care facility on Sargent Road.
And your concern?
And I live right next door to it, and it's been a troubled and positive and negative impact on the neighborhood. My biggest heartburn is the kind of high-density, out-of-character stuff that they're building around Fort Totten Metro. That construction is a mess. That high-rise rental is going to completely change the demographic of the neighborhood. And you're talking about the genteel, open space. I play senior softball. There's great rec centers at LaSalle, Taft on South Dakota. Fort Lincoln has one of the greatest tennis courts in the city. Nobody knows about. It's free walk-on. I think there's plenty of recreation in Northeast. But this high-density metro stuff is a disaster.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. I may as well add an email that we got from Sue, who says, one question that is looming is that we need to strike a balance between our community's aging seminarian population and our community's many elderly residents in the Brookland, Michigan Park area that do not have retirement plans and want to stay in their homes. This massive development is going to make it very difficult for them to stay in their houses, and they have nowhere to turn. So the question is, can we please strike some balance with this? And Martin, on the other hand, you talk to some people who are bullish on development coming to this part of the city. What's the argument for it, and how might it help address the housing crunch in the city?
Well, I think the basic argument is, listen, development is happening across the city because there's a need for it. People are moving into the city. They're looking for places to live. So someone's going to need to build places for them to live, because if not, we're all going to be fighting for the same amount of space.
So the city should be doing that, but go ahead.
Right. And I think in this case, it's a tough balance between a neighborhood that for it's the longest time, and I think John's book does a great job of showing you this through pictures that, I mean, this is rolling farmland. This is Washington County back in the day. This was literally, this was as suburban or exurban, you could even call it, as it was back then. But this is still a city. I think some other people will say, and look, growth has to happen at some point. And yes, you want to focus it around metro stations because that's kind of the assumption that metro lends itself to that. You want transit-oriented development. But that can't be it because, again, we still have a height limit. I mean, there's still restrictions, so you're going to have people building elsewhere. And I think that's where they're looking at neighborhoods like this and saying, there is open space. Institutions are willing to sell this land. And I think I understand the concerns people have. But when I talk to the institutions about this and people who know about Catholicism and Catholic orders, they say it's not that they're just trying to get rich. Is that they have to sustain aging priests and nuns. And they have a very small kind of class of young up-and-coming priests. So they got to find money somewhere. And if not, they're going to have to leave altogether. And that's the question there is, does the neighborhood lose more by losing Catholic institutions that may have defined it, or than it does by getting townhouses that may kind of impact the suburban feel that it's had?
John, as Martin has been pointing out, there's a sense that these Catholic institutions are very much a fabric of these communities. Just how difficult are the decisions that these orders are making? And are some of them making the decisions because they have to choose between staying and going?
Well, I think that some institutions have very strong community ties and have been in dialogue with the community in many ways. When I look at the Franciscan Monastery and I see Friends of the Monastery, the Garden Guild, for example, that's a community program that's worked with that institution. The piece that worries me that I think is not well known and it needs to be said is that developers and institutions can get together and make plans, but we live in a city that has a community input process that has planned unit development, and that kind of hearing process involves the community. And we have zoning that in a case last May, the appellate court said that one development plan for the Brookland area couldn't go forward because it was out of character with the comprehensive plan. People in our city need to familiarize themselves with what is in the comprehensive plan and what development proposals say and whether they're in sync or not. And so I think we're seeing some proposals coming forward in Brookland, Michigan Park that don't match up with the comprehensive plan. And people need to go to those hearings. They need to make their voice heard because the comprehensive plan says for Brookland, Michigan Park, you live in a residential neighborhood characterized by row houses, basically R2, not R5 properties.
Well, Martin, Peter in DC emails, one advantage of development is the transfer of property from tax exempt to taxable as it switches out of church control.
Right, exactly. I mean, you talk about all these seminaries, it's tax-free land, and that's, is like the Josephites, you're taking what's gotten empty land at this point, privately owned by the Josephites, but used by the community, they don't pay taxes on that land, would turn over to a developer, to UIA, they'd build 82 townhouses. All the money from the sales, deed and recordation taxes go to the city, property taxes go to the city. I mean, there is that argument that it adds to the city's tax base. And just off of what John says, he's right about the community input. And in a weird sort of way, this is why these processes are important. So in the Josephites case, they want to change zoning, which triggers this whole new level of public oversight, which is a good thing. It means the public can weigh in and say, listen, we hate this, we like this, or we want to extract concessions. If the developer wanted to build on the Josephite land today at zoning, they could. They could build a bunch of single-family homes literally out of vinyl and steel and glass and just make them look terrible. Whereas by going through this additional zoning process, they're essentially saying to the community, give us feedback. We'll do as much as we can to make you happy so that when the zoning commission hearings happen, we don't have 500 of you people screaming at us. We have 100, which is kind of more manageable.
Well, I have to say that since some neighbors over by the metro station in the case of the 901 Monroe Street LLC case, they said, no, we don't want it. They got a lawyer. And so what we've seen in the St. Joseph Seminary EYA project is quite a bit of give and take. They started with, 149? How many towers?
It was 150, the initial proposal. Now 82. Yeah.
And the community feedback has been very negative, even with 82 townhouses at R5. People are saying, no, we don't want it. And What I would like to see is developers that are willing to build a quality product within zoning. And then, you know, talk about that with the community. Mm-hmm. What we are hearing over and over again is developers who come to the community and say, we can't make any money if we don't have an R5 development. Well, you know, I look around Tacoma Park and the development around that metro station. I think there's some R2 development happening around there.
We got an email from Elaine in Brooklyn, who said, I moved to Brooklyn 10 years ago and since then have been collecting what I call Brooklyn moments. I was raised Catholic and educated by nuns until I went to college. It wasn't until I lived here that I ever saw a nun walking a dog. I think nothing of spotting a man in monastic robes in the grocery store. All the planned developments are fine with me as long as it does not drive out these neighbors. But here now is Tom in Brooklyn. Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I moved to the D.C. area initially in 2002 and have been a regular resident of this area since then, despite a couple years where I was off for school. But I just purchased a house in the Fort Totten area in Brooklyn, literally a three-minute walk from Fort Totten Metro Station. And I had put offers down on five other homes all across the city, and was really trying to be careful to mitigate the negative aspects of gentrification. And so I really only wanted to purchase a vacant house and did it through the 203K loan. I've been watching, although not necessarily involved yet in the neighborhood developments, there are some really positive aspects of what's happening, but I agree with some of the previous comments that they don't seem to be in line with what seems to be happening in other areas of the city that are perhaps more, I don't know how to put it, but more visually treasured. You look at a place like Logan Circle, for instance. They use a lot of the existing infrastructure there. The homes did get chopped up inside,
We don't have a great deal of time left, so allow me to have Martin to respond to the visual treasures that you mentioned.
I mean, I'm not going to get into the debate over visual treasures just because I'm going to get yelled at either way I go. I think these are really difficult discussions. I think, again, but I have to go back. I think my perspective is, if this is going to happen, it's good to have this planned unit development process where you force yourself to go through a year worth of public process. And, you know, that's where EYA is now. With the Josephites, they first rolled this out last November, I think it was. You know, their first zoning hearing, I don't think is even late this year. I think it might be early next year. And then even after that, you're still talking months of deliberation. So there's a lot of give and take that goes on. Now, ultimately, there's always going to be people who say, don't develop at all. And then there's going to be folks who say, listen, you got to give and take a little bit. And I think that's ultimately what I got from reporting this, is some people are saying, we don't feel comfortable with this, but if it's going to happen, if the Josephites are intent on selling their land, like, let's extract as many concessions as possible to make sure that whatever gets done, you know, we can live with ultimately.
Well, John Feely, you mentioned the comprehensive plan. Here's what CC in Washington has to say about that. CC, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you so much, Kojo, and certainly appreciate your program. Having lived through by being in Adams Morgan and seeing Harris Teeter stuck in an area where it was supposed to be no national or regional companies to be located. Also, the Harris Teeter was selling liquor within the boundary of the elementary school. This is just absolutely absurd. Our city leaders, unfortunately, do not have their constituents in mind or at heart while they have their part-time jobs that are paying six figures, and they're getting contributions. The greatest contributors to campaigns.
How do we make city leaders stick to the comprehensive plan, John Feely?
Well, I'm afraid the way it's going to happen is more law cases where small groups of homeowners sue the zoning commission the way the neighbors around 901 Monroe Street LLC's project did. And maybe that will make people in the Office of Planning, people in city council pay attention to the fact that we do have a process and that they can't violate it the way this gentleman's talking about the Adams Morgan situation.
John Feely, he is still living in the house in which he grew up in. He's an ANC commissioner in Brookland, Michigan Park. He is co-author of the book Images of America, book on the Images of America book on Brookland. John Feely, thank you very much for joining
us. And I just have to thank my head of school at Aiden Montessori for giving me time to come to this.
Martin Ostermuhl, where does this story go from here?
We're going to follow it along. Who knows? I mean, I think obviously there's a lot of community input left to be had on the Josephite property, also the Paulus and the Redemptorists. I think, you know, the debate over growth and development and the tensions it provokes is certainly not, it's not going to start in Little Rome. It's not going to end in Little Rome. It's just an interesting example of, you know, how it affects neighborhood identity.
Martin Ostermuhl, he's a reporter at WAMU 88.5. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, playoff baseball in D.C., big game tonight, but there's a potential both for glory and for heartache shaping the fan base here in equal measure. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.